You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. You are listening to Collected Works, Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner, two lecture cycles. The book itself is entitled True Knowledge of the Christ, and this first collection or cycle is entitled Theosophy and Rosicrucianism. This is Lecture 6, given in Kassel on the 21st of June, 1907. When human beings have got so far in the spiritual region, which we discussed yesterday, that they have transformed, as it were, everything by way of abilities and talents which they had gained in their life on earth, the time comes where they get ready for a new incarnation. We must understand that there are two things we see when we meet individual human beings: elements they have inherited, and others which they have brought with them into this world from earlier lives. We will be considering the human being's descent into this world. Please do not let the term descent upset you, for it is not a descent in spatial terms, but rather a gradual emergence from the world that surrounds us. We saw yesterday that this spiritual world must not be sought in some yonder region, but that it also exists right here, all around us. It is just that people have no possibility today of perceiving this spiritual world. A new incarnation or embodiment develops out of that world. We have seen that human beings have retained an essence of both the ether and the astral body from their earlier lives, an overview of what they lived through, and also as much of their astral body as they had refined. They had taken all this with them into the spiritual world. Only elements that had not been ennobled and refined had dropped away. We will get a better idea of reincarnation if we understand a few things about the life after death. We have seen that immediately after their physical death, human beings continue to live in their ether body for about 3.5 days, and that their past life rises up before them in a kind of tableau during those 3.5 days. After this, the ether body dissolves, and they enter into Kamaloka, a period of purification, removing all astrality that needs to be purified and cleansed. At this point, I must speak of another experience. Human beings go through a significant experience at the very moment when this memory tableau comes up immediately after death. They feel as if they are suddenly getting bigger, as if they were rapidly breaking through their surface and growing out into space. This feeling stays with them until they are born again. They feel themselves to be as large as the world to which they belong, as big as the whole of cosmic space. This will also give you an idea of how it is possible for human beings to see and be sentient of their bodies as if they were something alien. It is a strange feeling, being thus spread out through cosmic space. Then there is something else which is even more difficult to understand. During the whole of the Kamaloka time, human beings feel as if divided up in space. You'll understand this better like this. When someone lives his life back to childhood in Kamaloka, as I have told you, he feels everything he had experienced in life as if it were a mirror image. He will really feel the slap in the face he gave someone. He literally feels himself to be in part of the space the other individual had occupied. So, if you died here in Kassel, let us say, and the other person whose face you did slap in the past is living in Paris, you will feel as if a piece of you were there. You feel yourself altogether as if divided up in the cosmos. You feel as if pieces of you were in all the places where you have to deal with things, as it were. You have to understand that it is such that you feel nothing in the space between Paris and Kassel. So if you consider all events in your life in this respect, you literally feel cut up in pieces during this whole period after death. The following may serve as an analogy. A wasp is in two parts, an anterior part and a posterior part, which is connected with the other one by a very fine thread. Think of this posterior part cut off completely, though the wasp is still lugging it along. That is more or less how you may imagine this. You feel that you are in separate pieces, and there is no connection between the pieces. However, when human beings enter into Devakan, they will feel again the way they did immediately after death, as if they filled the whole of cosmic space. When human beings have transformed all their potential for talents and abilities in Devakan, the I will feel itself drawn to the physical earth again, seeking to descend to earth again for physical embodiment. First, the I, capital, will surround itself with an astral body. It does so by drawing everything astral to itself. It all comes together like iron filings coming together when a magnet is used and creates a particular configuration. The I has received impressions of everything it has gone through in traversing the soul and spirit land. And all this creates the basic powers involved in building the new astral body. The new astral body thus takes with it everything which the individual has gone through in earlier lives and in Kamaloka. All impressions gained now play a role in the way in which the individual becomes integrated in a new astral body. The human being now has his astral body, but he must also have the other levels of existence. The astral body has been created merely by using powers of attraction. Prior to conception, the individual is garbed in this astral body only. The seer, therefore, always sees these astral seeds of human beings as they wait for their conception and birth. He sees them fly about at tremendous speed, bell-shaped forms moving through space at enormous speed. Distances are nothing to them. They move so fast that distances do not matter at all. Now comes the assumption of an ether body. In this case, the human being cannot garb himself using only his own powers. His inherent powers cannot provide for the ether body on their own. Here, human beings need the assistance of certain spirits, which have to give a hand. You will gain an idea of these spirits if you consider that you sometimes use words that do not really mean anything to you. For instance, the terms, quote, soul of a nation, close quote, or, quote, spirit of a nation, close quote. Using these terms today, people have no real idea of what they mean, or think of something completely abstract. The seer has a different idea of this. There truly are, just as truly as we ourselves truly exist, spirits of a higher kind. These do not become incarnate and are nothing but the souls of nations or tribes. There is nothing vague in speaking of the spirit of a nation. The soul of a nation is a distinct spiritual entity, though it does not have a physical body, the ether body being its lowest one. The spirit of the nation also has an astral body, I, Manas, Buddhi, Atman, and one even higher principle, which human beings do not attain to, which in Christian esotericism is called the Holy Spirit, while theosophists call it the Logos. The seer is thus able to speak to the spirit of a nation, just as he speaks to another person. People have no real idea of these things today and think the term merely refers to the combined characteristics of an individual nation, which is not true, however, for they are genuine spiritual entities. Understanding for such things had to be lost because of materialistic thinking, but it will be regained. Today people tend to let the meaning of such terms vanish into thin air, but that is something which had to be. And it also had to be that a book was written and much admired, titled Die Kritik der Sprache, Critique of Language, by Fritz Mautner. Fritz Mautner is someone who dissolves everything that cannot be perceived with the senses. One has to be a radical thinker, devoid of all common sense, to write such a book, someone with the courage to break with all that is spirit and real. In future centuries, people will have to read this very book if they want to know what the thinking was at the turn of this century. The soul of a nation is absolutely real. It spreads like a vapor cloud, and all the ether bodies of individual members of the tribe or nation are embedded in it. Its powers flow into the ether bodies of individual people. Spirits that hold exactly this rank of soul of a nation take part in putting together the ether body of a new soul. This kind of spirit causes the human being to be directed toward a particular nation, one that is the most suitable for her or him. Now this ether body does not always fit in completely, and all the disharmonies you find in life are often due to the fact that the individual could not create his or her ether body using their own powers. Full accord will only come at a much later stage of earth evolution. The process of garbing with an ether body happens at great speed, something you cannot visualize knowing only earthly conditions. And then even higher spirits will guide the individual to the parents, who will be able to provide the right material for a physical body. A modern materialist will find it hard to believe that when a son looks like his parents, there is still something else connected with the body he has inherited from his parents. Yes, we do look like our ancestors physically, but this does not contradict what I have been saying. Let us consider a special case, the Bach family. Over a period of 250 years, more than 29, more or less, important musicians came from that family. A materialist will say that this shows that it is all due to heredity. In the same way, the Bernoulli family produced 8 mathematicians. How can this be? We will find it easiest to understand if we take a good look at heredity. As this is easier to understand in the case of a musician, let us look at the Bach family. Let us assume a young Bach had been in Rome, let us say, in an earlier incarnation, had worked through his potential gifts, and wanted to incarnate again. Supposing he had brought the greatest musical gifts with him as the fruit of earlier incarnations, he would not be able to do anything with all his gifts unless he found a well-developed ear. Without a well-developed ear, he would be as helpless as a virtuoso without an instrument. It was absolutely necessary for this individual to enter into a body that had a good organ for the gifts which he was bringing with him. The outer form of our internal and external organs is inherited, and to be a musician, this individual had to have a well-developed organ of hearing in that new life. Where would this be most easily found? In a family of musicians. He was, therefore, guided to where he would find the best organ for the further development of the gifts he had, and that was with the parents of Johann Sebastian Bach. How was it with the Bernoulli brothers? Mathematical thinking is not based on the nature of the brain, for the logic of mathematics does not differ from any other logic. No, the talent for mathematics depends on the particularly accurate organization of the three semicircular canals. This organ, not much bigger than a pea, lies embedded in the petrous part of the temporal bone and consists in three semicircular canals that correspond exactly to three-dimensional space. So if one canal is exactly vertical, the second goes from left to right, and the third from front to back. They are all at right angles to one another at exactly 90 degrees. This is the important point. The closer the canal is to a right angle, the better does the organ function. If it is injured in some way, vertigo develops and you lose your bearings in space. A talent for mathematics depends on these canals being particularly well developed, which provides the opportunity to use one's talent in mathematics. This organ is inherited, just as a good ear for music is. The brain reflects on space just as it does on philosophy. For example, but to have a feeling for shapes in space, that depends on these three semicircular canals. An individual with great mathematical gifts will incarnate in a family where this organ is really well developed, and that was the case with the Bernoulli family. It also needs the right instrument to be truly moral. Someone with great morality will therefore look for parents likely to provide him with the best instrument for this. People may lightheartedly say that you can't be careful enough in choosing your parents, but it is true in the deepest, most serious sense, for a child may indeed be said to choose his parents. Some people may object and say, quote, "What about mother love, then? For that surely arises because a mother feels the child to be a piece of herself." Close quote. Seen in the right light, mother love is not negatively affected in any way by this. Quite the contrary. We gain an even deeper understanding of it. Why is the child born of that particular mother? Because the child's spiritual qualities guide it to a mother of the same spiritual quality, and the child loves its mother even before it is conceived. Mother love is the counterpart, as it were, to that primary attachment. An insight like this will give even deeper meaning to the term. It will essentially depend on the qualities of the father and the mother, what opportunity they provide for incarnation. And this is where father and mother are different. When a human being comes down to be born again, the I, having more powers of will, is attracted more to the father, and the part which has more astral powers to the mother. The father thus has a greater influence on the I, on will and character, the mother more on the astral body, that is, the power to envisage things. In the ideal case, both parents are just right for the individual wanting to incarnate. The powers with which the human being is imbued in the ascent also have an effect in the descent. All this creates powers of attraction, and the individual will be drawn into the sphere that has always borne a relationship to him. He is thus guided toward the people with whom he has already been involved to a degree in the past. Let me give you an example based on a real situation. Four or five judges in a Vaimic court, readers aside, Vaimic is spelled V-E-H-M-I-C, it might be Famic, and of readers aside, condemned a man to death and he was executed. A spiritual scientific investigation of these six people showed that all these men had been together on earth in their previous life, with the condemned man, the chieftain, and that the others had been executed by him. That last execution was therefore a kind of balancing out. This particular case provides a good demonstration of the law of karma. The different powers which someone has drawn to him in his previous life thus act in concert. On reincarnation, they determine the bodily constitution, the place where the individual will be born, and his further destiny. Dissonances are often more evident in the physical body than they are in the ether body. All this shows us how human beings are garbed in three bodies on reincarnation. With every incarnation, the eye works on the astral body, ether body, and physical body. We will hear later how they rise to this high level of perfection. But the astral body and ether body is transformed more and more, and the refined astral body turns more and more into manas, the refined ether body into buddhi, the refined physical body into atman. That is how we may think of the progressive perfection from incarnation to incarnation. It is most beautifully put in words in the Lord's Prayer, though we will only understand it rightly if we take it in the truly Christian sense, as it was taken in St. Paul's occult school. In this school, the true Christian meaning of the Lord's Prayer was explained. The pupils were told something like, quote, "Think of the higher levels of human existence, which develop as human beings progressively refine their three lowest levels," close quote. The early Christians saw these three higher levels, manas, buddhi, atman, as the human being's divine nature. In progressively developing these higher levels, human beings came closer and closer to the Godhead. Taking this point of view, the early esoteric Christians called the three highest levels divine nature, and called the highest level Atman, the Father. This is the most profound divinity in human beings, the Father in the heavens. This Father is the goal of all human development. It is the focal point in the world's creation. The best way of looking at creation in Christian terms is to have real understanding of sacrifice, offering. Think your mirror image, and assume you can be so selfless as to offer your life to the mirror image. We have to see selfless creation as a process in which one gives oneself up wholly to one's creation. Imagine the Father Spirit at the center of a hollow sphere that is mirroring itself, so that the image of God presents itself 1,000 times. The early esoteric Christian would thus say, quote, "Consider the world. What are all creatures but images of God?" close quote. And in their esoteric teachings, they called this mirrored Godhead, quote, "the kingdom," close quote, meaning, quote, "God in his mirror image everywhere," close quote. Now, let your feeling develop further. If you see God in everything, you will have dissolved the Godhead into countless separate details. And to tell them apart, you must give every one of them a name. This name must be hallowed, for every single creature is, after all, an image of the Godhead. Developing into these three, human beings come closer to God. You must not think, however, that the human being then is God. Take a drop from the ocean. It is the same by nature as the ocean, but it is not the ocean. In the same way, the drop of divinity in us is of the same nature as the Godhead, but it is not the Godhead. In progressively developing the three highest levels of existence, human beings come to be more and more at one with the kingdom, for the spiritual world is coming down to them. There you have the first three petitions in the Lord's Prayer. First, in calling upon the Father. Secondly, in the plea that the kingdom come to us. Thirdly, in the hallowing of the name. We will then always endeavor to do nothing that is not in harmony with the Father's Spirit, from which we have sprung forth, and toward which we develop, as we develop, the three highest levels of existence in us. Esoteric Christianity, then, considers the four lower levels of human existence to be in contrast to the three higher levels, and that these must also grow more and more perfect. The physical body consists of the same material as the natural world around us, substances that are also all the time entering into this physical body and leaving it again. They have to enter and leave if the physical body is to continue in good health. The ether body has powers which are in a reciprocal relationship to the whole soul of the nation, just as the physical body has a reciprocal relationship with the whole of the natural world around us. If the physical body is to be in good order, physical substances must enter and leave day by day. If the ether body is to be in good order, it must not develop in isolation, but be in harmony with the whole soul of the nation and all higher spirits. The term debt has to do with debts. Debts are something which really shows that you are not on your own, but in a social context, that you owe something to the others around you. The astral body can fall into disorder, and in original Christian esotericism, this was considered to be something to do with its tendencies and passions, drives, and desires. Everything that may cause such disorder is expressed in the term, in quotes, temptation. Debt, therefore, is something through which people relate to the community. Temptation, something to which every human being can be subject as an individual. If physical substances were not entering and leaving our physical body, this physical body would soon be out of order. Quote, give us today the bread we need every day. Close quote. If the ether body were not in harmonious interaction with the soul of the nation qualities, that is, if it were not to fit in harmoniously with the whole social system, it would also fall into disorder. Quote, forgive us our debts. Close quote. If human beings were to fall into error and give way to every temptation that came to them, their astral principle would fall into disorder. Quote, lead us not into temptation, close quote, or do not bring us to the test, close quote. The I can be subject to the errors which are referred to as evil, in quotes. These errors of the I, which is our self, include everything which changes a normal, sound self-awareness into evil, that is, into self-seeking. This involves all transgressions of egotism, quote, deliver us from evil, close quote. The physical body can develop in a sound way if we let it have its daily bread in the right way. The ether body can develop in a sound way if we find the right harmony with the social body in which we live. The astral body can develop in a sound way, that is, be brought to purification and cleansing, if we overcome all temptations. The I can develop in a sound way if we make the effort to transform all egotism into altruism, all self-seeking into selflessness. The Lord's Prayer is thus a prayer which encompasses the further development of the whole human being. Someone may object, and you will come across this objection quite often, that the Lord's Prayer is a prayer which Christ Jesus gave as a prayer for everyone. So what is the point of such an interpretation which is beyond the knowledge of most people? Naive people need not know any of this. Look at a rose. The greatest wisdom has led to its development, and yet it is there for all to enjoy. It is not necessary to know of this wisdom. And that is also how it is with the Lord's Prayer. It affects the human heart and soul, even if naive people know nothing about this. But it would never have that power if it had not arisen from that most profound wisdom. All the great forms of prayer have arisen like this, the greatest of them all, from that profound wisdom. And the power of these forms of prayer is based on this alone. You may think that it is something thought up, but that is not so. The Spirit who gave us the Lord's Prayer has given it that profound power. You see, therefore, that it needs the help of spiritual science to understand something which we practice daily, and the power of which has been with humanity for 2 millennia. Now, however, the time has come in human evolution where we cannot go on unless we gain deeper insight. In the past, meaning before this, humanity was able to feel the spiritual power of this very prayer without being aware of its deeper meaning. Now, however, humanity has advanced so far in its evolution that people must ask, and so they must now be given the answer. The Christian religion will not lose it in value with this, but rather gain in depth. The greatest wisdom will lead to the religious content being gained afresh. One example of this is the esoteric elucidation of the Lord's Prayer. It shows us the direction that human beings have to take through their many incarnations. If they proceed in the spirit of the 4 lower petitions, these will help them to do the work that leads to the configuring of the higher levels of human existence as they are presented in the first 3 petitions. The end of Lecture 6.